The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at BlickmanEngineering.com.
Time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy. Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Greetings, cretins.
How y'all doing today? Sounds like you're getting ready for the, going up near Canada there. You're getting ready for Michigan.
Yeah, I am.
You know, should be fun.
Yeah, it should be all right. I mean, I'm going to spend a week in Chicago first at the NBAA ASBC Brewing Summit.
Oh, cool.
And then head over to Michigan there.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a blast. I went down to Stone Brewing.
Oh, yeah, just, you're collaborating, right?
Yeah, with Heretic Stone and Beechwood Brewing.
So cool.
Julian was there, too. And we had a blast. I threw in a box of hops. I cut open a couple bags of biscuit malt.
You don't think those hops will be out of place, do you? I mean,
right? Yeah, there you go. No, and it's funny because we come in, you know, part way through, you know, batch whatever.
Yeah.
And they're doing three batches to fill a 120 barrel fermenter. Or 140 gross, and then they net like 120 out of it.
Sure.
That's the size of the batch, and they do three of those to fill a fermenter, a 300 plus barrel fermenter.
Okay.
So they're doing like 18 300 barrel batches, or something like that. Or good they're Lord. Doing six 300 barrel batches. Yeah, so 18 kettle batches. Into six 300 barrel fermenters.
Of this collaboration beer?
Yes.
Wow.
So they're making a bunch. Yeah, so that was my work for the day. It was hanging
what
out.
What kind of beer is it going to be?
It is going to be just a double IPA.
Well, between the three, it should be awesome.
Yeah, and the hops are like a Belma and HB 342 and
oh, that's a good one.
6400 or 6300 and like something else. I don't know, Chinook and Centennial or something like that. So a ton of different hops. Smelled hoppy.
All right,
there you go. And cool. they're like, yeah, that's a bunch of hops. That's more hops than we use in like Ruination. Like, okay, should be fine. Let's do it. We'll see. I think it'll try fine. And then we did another collaboration. We did a collaboration with Roger at Faction.
Oh, yeah.
We did that at Heretic, and that's and with Nathan Smith. So Nathan, Roger, and Heretic, we did a double black IPA
of 3%,
and we're serving that tomorrow. And then we went down the following week to Faction, and we all brewed there. And did a session white IPA.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. The theory is you can blend the session white IPA and the double black IPA, and you end up with Janet's Brown. There you go.
Interesting.
Oh, we'll see what it turns out. I don't know. But I think both beers are going to turn out really good. I am pleased.
Cool. Well, I just got back from Brazil with Stan Hieronymus and Brad Smith.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we went down there for the state of Santa Clarita has a brewing association. I don't have the name in front of me right now, so I'll mangle it. But Cerevisia or something or other. But it's sent with the state name. Sorry, guys. Anyway, they had a real nice conference. Had Stan and Brad and I as speakers.
Was that the one on the island or whatever it was?
Yeah, the island of Florianopolis, which is very nice. Uh-huh. I recommend it as a vacation spot to everybody. It's nice climate. It's kind of L.A., Southern California-ish in terms of climate.
And, so lots of wildfires is what you're saying?
No, it's actually very lush and tropical. The latitude's about the same, so the temperatures, we were there, this is fall for them. And it was, 75, 80, very, very green everywhere. And the area was heavily settled by Germans and Italians, so there's a lot of good breweries around there. Went to a bunch of good places. A place called Fascia Preta, which means black belt. Another German brewery called Griffin Beer. Another big brewery called Das Beer. But they all made really good beers.
Das Beer.
I thought that was kind of fun.
You're not supposed to call the boot Das Boot, right? I think Dan Gordon chastised me for doing DOS, so I'm glad to know that Germans do still embrace the DOS fill in the blank.
Yeah. They have fun with it.
DOS beer. Yep. All right. Well, that sounds like a blast.
It really was. Great time. Went to an Irish pub for several beers later. And they brewed on premise there, and their beers were good. And
did you have like meat on a stick? Sizzling
well,
meat
no,
on
we
a
had
stick?
We had the full game plate from a place called Wunderwald. Wunderwald.
Yeah. So what, they go out and like kill everything they can in the backyard and
burn
it and put
it
on a
stick.
It was
properly presented, and we had duck, we had deep fried pig knees, we had sausage.
Deep fried pig knees?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I didn't know they had pygmies in Brazil. And isn't that an inappropriate term to use? Isn't that politically incorrect?
Well, I suppose the knees of the people? Common porcine could be reviewed as being slightly risque to some members of the public, but usually...
Oh, pig knees. Now I get. Yes. Now I understand. Uh-huh. I mean,
Yeah, they were tasty.
Just anything deep fried.
Yeah, that's true.
Pig knees is also a politically incorrect term, Jamil. Don't you know? It's offensive.
Okay. All right. Sure. Well, it depends on who you say pig knees to.
Right. To pigs. It's offensive to pigs.
Oh. It's hello? It's like the wife's like, how do my knees look? And you're like, oh, dear, it looks like you got pig knees. That could be improper. That could be a problem.
That could be a problem.
Yeah. There you go. Well, and speaking of not a problem, our fine sponsor, Blickman Engineering.
Yes.
Huh? How about that, John Blickman?
He's always innovating.
Yes, and he's never been known to say anything politically incorrect.
That's right. His reputation precedes him.
Yes, absolutely. Probably a big trail behind him, too. John Blickman and his team out there, Blickman Engineering, Blickman with two N's. Go check them out, blickmanengineering.com. They're coming up with all sorts of innovations to make your brew day, just that much more exciting. I am looking forward to maybe trying out some new Blickman gear here at Heretic.
Oh, really?
A little something. Might be coming our way. I don't know.
Yeah, I've got a dibs on a brew easy. I'm looking an all electric brew easy. I'm looking forward to trying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to brewing that. I saw the beta unit and that he's been was working with, and it's a really slick system.
So he's going to have this at the conference too, right?
Right.
You'll be able to check it out in Michigan at the Homebrewers Conference, and make sure you stop by the booth. Make sure you say hi to John and his team. Tell them you listen to the show and you appreciate the fact that they've paid for this show for the last 7 years.
Something like that, yeah.
Or so. So you don't have to. So I think that's worthy of at least stopping by the booth and saying hi. Telling them you appreciate
Indeed.
It. Indeed. All right. Today we're going to be doing a Q&A show. And where we get the bulk of our questions is from emails. You send your email in to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. And we'll we don't respond to those generally, but we do take a lot of questions from that for the show. So if you've got a Q&A question, just send it on in, and eventually we get to it.
Mm-hmm. We do.
So let's do this. Let's take a short break. When we come back, I'll have a beer, and we'll have some questions right after this.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
All right, BN Army, it's trivia time. What's the only homebrew shop with over 1,000 recipe kits, $4.99 shipping on orders over $100, and is also home of the Wolf shirt? The one and only answer is Austin Homebrew Supply. For over 20 years, they've specialized in creating recipes such as the best-selling Texas Blonde Ale, Apocalypso, Hop Bomb 2.0, and Double Chocolate Stout. And they just recently unveiled their small grain kits that produce 1 gallon of beer. Visit Austin Homebrew.com to browse their extensive catalog of equipment and ingredients. They also have mini clone recipes of your favorite commercial beers. They're the exclusive retailer of BrewVent Yeast Fuel as well, Yeast Nutrient, and the all-new Bodybuilder. Follow Austin Homebrew Supply on Google Plus to participate in video hangouts on popular brewing topics. So visit AustinHomebrew.com today and make sure you sign up for their weekly email with news and specials. Austin Homebrew Supply, AustinHomebrew.com.
A vial of White Labs yeast is the key to your best beer. When you open a vial of White Labs yeast, you're giving your beer its best chance for a perfect fermentation. In addition to their already incredible variety of yeast, White Labs is proud to announce WLP 90, San Diego Super Yeast, now available year-round. WLP 90 is super clean, super fast fermenting, with low esters, and has a neutral flavor and aroma profile. It's alcohol tolerant and highly flocculent. For more of the latest White Labs news, click over to whitelabs.com, where you can read reviews of yeast, learn in the lab section, and join the customer club. And if you should find yourself in San Diego, White Labs has a brand new training facility for craft brewers and home brewers alike. whitelabs.com. Discover yeast, nutrients, enzymes, and more for commercial breweries, home brewers, and homebrew stores. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for any beer style. I want a Cicerone. The Cicerone certification program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are 3 levels in the Cicerone program. certified beer server, certified Cicerone, and master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerones are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Hi, I'm Jason Harris, the proud owner here at Keystone Homebrew Supply. We're thrilled to be entering our 20th year of supplying this great industry. And to show you, the Brewing Network Army, how much we appreciate your support, we're offering you 10% off your first order on our website, KeystoneHomebrew.com. Just use coupon code BNARMY at checkout, and I'll get your order out the same day. My goal at Keystone Homebrew Supply has always been to have a complete supply of everything a brewer could want. When you place your order online or when you come into our store, it's our goal to have everything on your list and more. One aspect of KeystoneHomebrew.com that we're really excited about is the ability to fulfill customers' exact grain bills. Do you hate to wait? Keystone Homebrew Supply can get your precious yeast and hops to you within just one day if you live between Connecticut and Virginia, and within 2 days east of the Mississippi. KeystoneHomebrew.com. I'm Jason Harris, and I approve this message.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right. I've got beer in front of me. We got questions queued up. I think we're ready.
All right. Let's start with JC, who asks, this is a malt question. At what percentage of the grain bill will wheat cause a protein haze? He said, I brewed an all-grain saison with 10% wheat, and it has a haze. I did not know if I should expect a haze because of the wheat, or is 10% wheat too small to cause a haze?
Well,
yeah. Took the word right out of my mouth.
For haze.
Yeah.
Are you going to take this one, John?
Are you talking to yourself?
Yes, I
was just going to say, you know, normally there's enough protein around anyways to cause a haze. You know, it's not necessarily 10% wheat is like nothing. It's just what you do with that material, you know. So
yeah, and I would add that there's several other factors besides grain bill or mm-hmm. other including other grains in the grain bill mm-hmm. that can contribute to haze. So there's nothing special about the wheat, I guess, is the short answer mm-hmm. in this case.
Yeah, you could have, you know, a bad barley that could cause a haze. You could have, generally, you know, it's, the tannins, it's the, you know, if you get a lot of protein left over and then, you dry hop or something like that and, you know, the tannins mm-hmm. and the proteins and you get that and protein complex, and then you get some haze from that as well, or chill haze, or so. Because you can make a 100% wheat beer that's clear, right?
Yep, indeed.
So it's not the wheat; it's something else in your process. What would you suggest for him to
World Flock?
World Flock, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Irish Moss, World Flock, I guess the other thing is I'd like to know what recipe, what style he's brewing. I mean, like I said, there's so many different potential sources for haze. It could have been mm-hmm. his mash.
It could be water related in some way, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if he had high manganese levels or tin or iron in the water, that would mm-hmm. also cause haze.
Yeah, check your water, see if it's manganese-y.
You can taste that.
You taste real manganese-y.
Yeah, really earthy tasting.
Well, I mean, I to put it in layman's terms, I guess you could say that, but, you know, it's very manganese-y, as we say in the beer judging business.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Right.
That's the title of your next book, isn't it?
Yes. My road to manganese. Yeah. Yes.
The Jamil story.
Exactly.
John, you going to write the foreword?
Yeah, I'm going to title it Sucking Manganese. Yes.
All right, next question.
From Chris in Louisville, Kentucky. John and Jamil, I'm not new to fermenting, but I'm relatively new to homebrewing. I've read How to Brew, and I'm currently working my way from the oldest Brew Strong shows to the newest. This may sound absurd, but I don't like hops. I prefer the maltier beer styles with maybe only mildly bittering. I don't like IPAs, in addition to being allergic to them. So let's stop there because I'm curious. Is this guy really allergic, or is he just up in his head? Is that a thing, hop allergy?
I'm first I've heard of it, but...
I know... I think, yeah, a hop allergy, I think absolutely could be, you know, because people have allergies to all sorts of things.
Yeah, I know, but people are, they don't really, they're just hypochondria.
No, I mean, it's like nickel allergies. I mean, most people are hypochondriacs, and they're just allergic to stupid things, and like people with like gluten and crap like that, that's just, it's totally meaningless for the majority of people.
Right. It does exist, but not nearly on the scale that one would be led to believe.
But I could imagine somebody could be allergic to hops.
Yeah. At first, I thought from his symptoms, which he goes on to describe as kind of like sinuses swelling shut, eyes mm-hmm. and nose itch. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe he's actually got celiacs. But if he's able to drink non-hoppy beers without these symptoms, then mm-hmm. it's probably not the gluten.
Because there are some times when, you know, I get some seriously hoppy beers and I can or, you know, I'm smelling hops or something like that, and I will get congested from, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. And I don't know if it's just something else or it could be, you know, slightly mixed in with that, those hops. Maybe there was some other, you know, weed in the fields that somehow, you know, got mixed in and I'm allergic to
that. Found aphids.
Yeah, I'm, you know, or some ragweed or whatever it would be. You know, I am, you know, allergic to things. I get you know sinus issues during you know allergy season, so you know, it could be something along those lines. So
yeah, well, and he does say, like John was saying, that his sinuses swell shut, his face and eyes itch, and he becomes uncontrollably sleepy when he drinks anything strongly hopped. So he says when he's brewing a batch, he uses Beersmith to drop his hops down to the bottom end of the style that he's brewing. So his questions are, there's two of them. One, is it possible to do well in a competition with a beer brewed at the bottom end of the IBU range? He hasn't entered a competition yet. Or is it just the personal preference of the judge that you happen to get? Just wondering if I should even bother entering anything I make for myself, or maybe make a special small batch just for competitions.
You know, if it's, you know, you still have a good balance. So it's not just about, you know, adjusting hops. If you're going to adjust your IBUs or something like that down to, you know, a lower level, and then, you know, not adjust the rest of the recipe, then it's probably going to be screwed up. But if you adjust at all, and it's more important to understand what the balance is that you're looking for between, you know, the malt and the hops, not, well, hops is just a number, I'm going to lower it and leave everything else the same. You're looking for that overall perception of the beer. And if you can make that nice, yeah, you could win. But if you're just adjusting one without regard to the other, then no, you're going to mess it up. The other thing I think might help him is I'm almost certain it's not the alpha acids, the bittering compounds that are the issue. It's probably more of some of the other more volatile compounds.
The oils and such.
Right, so if you're looking at, you know, adding enough bittering for a certain style, I mean, you know, go to the non-hoppy styles, the ones that, you know, they have bittering but no hop character, and then use a very high alpha acid hop, so you use less of it. So you're using less of the vegetal matter, and, you know, that would probably help as well. And then you could still get the bittering, but, you know, or you could maybe even try extract. That might be a way to go.
So you think ultimately his best bet is to... Well, I mean, if he should brew a batch just for competition, and if he does the beer he does for himself, he should look at other numbers besides just the hops.
No, I would I don't think he has to brew something just for competition. I think, you know, if he's adjusting, you know, towards the lower end of the range on IBUs, well, you're going to need to adjust to the lower end of the range on some of the other aspects of the beer.
How could
try
you
for a balance?
How could you do that for would you not hit your target ABV or the ABV that the style calls for since you're scaling everything back?
No. Well, it's a range.
Yeah. You know, generally, you know, let's say they give you 35 to 50 IBU in a dry stout or whatever it is. You could be at 35 IBU, but you need to adjust the rest of the things as well. But it's all part of the given range.
Yeah, the low end of the OG, that sort of thing. Maybe a little less of the roast malts, mm-hmm. or a little more roast malt to make up, you know, bitterness on that end that you're not putting in terms of IBUs. I mean, you'd have to play with the style.
Okay, he did have a quick second part of the question, which is, what is the minimum amount of hops IBU required?
One part questions, dudes. One question per email.
You want to move on?
No, go ahead.
Okay, what is the minimum amount of hops / IBU required in a brew to provide the preservative qualities they can be used for? Or does it really even matter once bottled or kegged? Would a brew without hops last very long in a keg of purged of air?
This is kind of, it's a poor question in that the preservative quality of hops is not well understood here. Jamil, I think you'll agree with me that the preservative quality of hops is the alpha acids and oils' ability to coat cells, bacterial or yeast. Mm-hmm. And in the case of bacteria, it kind of prevents them from reproducing.
Right.
So that hops can protect from bacterial spoilage of the beer, souring of the beer, but they don't do anything to prevent oxidation as such.
Mm-hmm. Your beer can still stale. Yeah, the hop preservative thing's been overblown. It's like another, you know, one of those other things that everybody, you know, it's like first wort hopping. Oh my God, that's, you know, great hop flavor. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you're just killing me with the stuff like that. And the same thing with the preservative nature of hops. The best preservative is, you know, good brewing practices.
Right.
You know, good boil, good fermentation, good sanitation. You know, watch air after after the beer's done, things like that. And then, you know, it'll, you know, refrigerate it. The colder it is, the longer it'll last. You know, things like that. And, you know, the beer will last for, you know, far longer than you need to have the beer around to consume it. And, you know, to answer the question, what's the IBU level for preservative? I believe it's something like 7 or 9. It's something really small.
Yeah, somewhere around 10, I think. Yeah. 7, 9, 10, whatever.
So there you go. There's your answer.
All right, and Chris, the dark side suggests, he's in the chat room, he suggests you switch to gruits because they have no hops.
So, yeah, but it's got other spices and crap in it. And I think I've told this story before. I'm at GABF. I'm judging the spicer vegetable beers or specialty beers or something. And along comes this beer, and it just says, like, you know, cinnamon such and such and, like, 13 other herbs and spices. And I'm like, okay, and I'm doing fine. And I take a sip of this, and immediately I have this allergic reaction to it. And it's like my throat's closing up, and I'm like, my face is swelling. I'm like near death. I'm going like anaphylactic shock. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, what the heck? What's in this? And somebody quickly brings me some antihistamines. And I take that, and, you know, it starts to go back down. But it was terrifying. And I'm just like, what kind of crap is in there that it would cause that? Because I'm not really allergic to any foods or anything.
I've often wondered how they can do that. Because if you read nutrition labels, it'll say, like, it'll list really specific ingredients.
Right.
Polypropylphenol number B4.
Right.
And then it'll say other natural flavors.
Right, right.
Well, are you being specific or no?
Well, and, you know, something like that. And I think as a brewer, you need to be careful because, you know, you put something in there that could kill somebody and then you send out a competition. You know, I would be very cautious of giving, you know, very odd, you know, things that are common food ingredients, common food spices, that wouldn't worry me too much. Because then, you know, something like that, and you say, oh, it's got spices in it, and you ain't giving it to somebody. They're like, hey, I'm allergic to, you know, pepper or something. And you go, oh, yeah, it's got pepper in it. Or I'm allergic to cinnamon, you know, common stuff. But when it's like some esoteric bark off a tree and, you know, and from the Antarctic or something, then...
castor root.
Right, yeah.
Rhubarb
if you're leaves. If you're having to dig it up... and then, like, have a cat eat it and shit it out, and then put that in your beer. You know, maybe then you ought to, like, warn people before they drink it.
I think BrewDog is doing that.
Right, right, right. Or if you're putting a raccoon penis in your beer.
How do you get the raccoon to hold still for that, I wonder?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, it depends on the size of the opening. And then, you know, something like that, which but at least that had some fair warning to it. There you go. I would just be careful.
Have you been given guidelines at Heretic as far as what you have to list exactly and what you can get away with just saying other natural flavors?
You know, in a pub setting, you can put anything in it you want, essentially, and then, you know, serve it to people with, like, no warning whatsoever. But if you are a packaging brewery and you send stuff out, all the that stuff has to go through a formula approval. And then, and they do look for, you know, they're not going to make sure everything's 100% safe, but they do look for common, like you're putting mercury in it or something. And there's certain additives that some large breweries add for foam stabilization and clarity and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Instead of using isinglass bladders, you use blowfish bat bladders.
Right, they have, you know, technical limits on it. So they check that stuff.
All right, next question is more hops, and also from a guy named Chris, the Dyslexic Alchemist. He said, in the beer staling episode back in 2011, you guys talked about how the hops and the malt oxidize over time, and the hoppier and lighter beers last the shortest amount of time. I was under the impression that hops were supposed to be a preservative in beer, in addition to bittering and adding cat pee shrubbery character. That's the whole point of the IPA, right? Is it the bittering aspect that helps preserve the beer?
Who is this, JP asking this?
Writing under the pseudonym Chris, perhaps. Is it the bittering aspect that helps preserve the beer while the shrubbery flavors and pissy aroma are what get oxidized and drop out? Or does the bittering drop out as well? Is there a difference between preservation and staling?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, right. You took the word right out of my mouth right again. I would say, you know, there's a difference between those two. And like we said earlier, you know, the preservative effect of hops is really just, you know, mainly biologically preservative, I think.
Microbial, yes.
Yes.
The cat piss and shrubbery.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all those flavors drop out, including the bittering.
They oxidize is what happens to them. The compounds oxidize and they convert into insoluble compounds that will drop out. They convert into non-aromatic compounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, even in the lack of oxygen, they will still... you'll experience a reduction in those compounds as well. So, and then staling, so there's oxidation, which, you know, essentially is, you know, can be part of staling, or you can have staling without oxygen.
Right, using oxidation reduction type reactions where it's a chemical reaction between constituents in the beer that aren't necessarily oxygen, but they're electron donors or acceptors.
Mm-hmm. And heat, of course, accelerating that process. So, why was he asking about if hops are a preservative, et cetera, et cetera?
He said he was just having a hard time understanding why anyone would add something that subjectively stinks and tastes bad and costs time, energy, and money to make if it doesn't perform its intended function.
Well, its intended function is actually... people think they taste good and smell good. That's their intended function. Mm-hmm. You know, if just because, as he said, subjectively, you know, if he thinks that they're not, then it's apparently not for him. It's not for JP, but it is for, you know, a lot of other people.
There are several things that look you know, smell bad, don't taste that great, just you really develop a fondness for.
Is that what you tell your wife? Oh, on that zinger, let's take a short break, and when we come back, John will have forgiven me, and we'll be talking once again right after this.
Stole my punchline.
A few things happened 30 years ago.
ARPANET migrated to TCP/IP, and the Internet was born. Revenge of the Jedi was renamed Return of the Jedi and opened in theaters. Mila Kunis and Emily Blunt were born, beginning a rad fantasy in my mind.
But all of that pales next to the fact that HopTech opened its doors and began blowing homebrewers right out of their mash tuns. HopTech doesn't fuck around. Real people shipping awesome shit straight to you. Their new website is fast and easy to navigate. Or just call 800-379-4677 and let badass bitch Jade and brewing brother Roberto blow their warm load of customer service all over you. So visit the site or visit the store in Dublin, California, and support those that support you. Get your brewing on at hoptech.com.
There's an app on the iPhone for just about everything, including beer. Apps for finding a pint of beer. Apps that look like you're drinking a pint of beer. And now, there's an app for brewing a pint of beer. Introducing BrewPal, the most all-inclusive beer brewing app for professionals and hobbyists that fits in your pocket and goes wherever you do. Recipe formulation that can be imported and exported with a customizable database. Mash and sparge calculations, yeast pitching rates, carbonation tables, and more. Available right now for less coin than a pound of grain. See BrewPal in action at brewpal.info and download it for your iPhone at a special introductory price right now. BrewPal, all the brewing software you need, right in your pocket.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is the new go-to source for home brewing enthusiasts and anyone passionate about craft beer. Each new issue is full of inspiration, recipes, and techniques for home brewing, cooking and pairing food with beer, and features from craft brewers and the world of craft beer. More than 120 full-color pages of content, quarterly releases, and annual specials. Get practical advice from brewing experts, equipment reviews, great interviews, and much more. There's a new craft beer magazine available right now. Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine on newsstands now. Visit www.beerandbrewing.com. Subscribe now and get your limited edition bottle opener free today. Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, the new word in craft beer and brewing. Williams Brewing announces their first customer recipe issue since 1991. This free 64-page catalog includes 27 of the best home brewing recipes submitted by their regular customers. Best of all, this paper-only catalog is free for the asking. Just go to williamsbrewing.com and click on the free customer recipe issue link. This offer expires October 18th. While you are on the site, check out some of the latest exclusives like the Williams
oatmeal stout malt extract, the big oxygen system, and they even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enjoy their famous customer service. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 4 p.m. Pacific Time weekdays ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. During the break, we talked about... We talked about air conditioning and how the new studio is going to actually have proper air conditioning. Because we talked about how caffeine affects yourself. We talked about how temperature affects you. And then we talked about how the temperature will suck in the new studio as badly as it does in all the other studios that we've been in.
Well, it's the same guy that built your brewery, Jamil, that's built in our bar. And he has sworn up one side and down the next that we will be comfortable.
Yeah, sure. All right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yeah. Whatever you say.
All right, this is a yeast question here from Casey in Castro Valley. Said, what's up, guys? I wish I would have caught the last Sour Show live so I could have thrown this question in there, but I've been struggling with a few. That's the guest in the studio. Contain yourself, please. The police officer is belching into the mic. He's been struggling with a few things regarding his sours that weren't in the show. You guys have definitely talked about these topics, but I'm stupid and get confused easily. Please hold my hand while I delve into the world of sours. So, first one is, I constantly hear about the pellicle forming on the top layer, which I have on all three of my sours. But at the same time, I hear about the importance of continually topping off the barrels with wort to reduce O2 contact. How are both possible? If I keep topping it off with fresh wort, won't I just keep blowing out the top? I've heard adding marbles to bring the level up works great. That's just going to aerate the hell out of it, right?
Well, I can see topping up a barrel, yes, but is he fermenting in barrels?
Right. I think so. It sounds like he's kind of a little mixing one and the other, apples and oranges here. Generally, if you are souring in barrels and you know the core of fermentation's done, you don't top up with wort, but you top up with beer. You know, a lot of breweries like Cantillon and Russian River, what they'll do is, even when they're, you know, fermenting in the barrels, they'll only top up once. So they'll get it going, and then I forget the point at which they top up, but it'll be like maybe a couple or a few weeks in, they'll top it up. And then that's it. They never touch it again. And, you know, a lot of it is to not disturb the pellicle. The other thing is if you let the level drop, you get more surface area. You get more pellicle. You get a little more of that bright character, I think. You know, it's a balancing act because if you let too much oxygen in, you get too much activity with the Brett. You can actually, the Brett can actually generate acetic acid, a vinegar character, and you don't want that.
Right.
So you kind of want to be careful. When we did the miscreant, which just got a gold at the Australian International competition.
Sweet. Awesome. What category?
Hell if I know. Beer. I think it was a beer category. That's one that we topped up religiously every week. We kept that thing topped. I wanted to minimize, you know, the oxygen, things like that. And, you know, I think, you know, the souring and a lot of the other activity, you know, and that character takes longer, is a little more mellow that way. If you let it kind of draw down, because the thing will evaporate. I mean, you'll be so shocked at how much will evaporate out of these. Then, you know, letting it draw down will kind of accelerate some of the process. So, I mean, it depends on what you're trying to achieve. But I wouldn't screw in with marbles. I mean, the topping off thing, you know, topping off with new fresh beer, you know, unbarreled beer to keep the level up, That's one thing. But if you toss in marbles, you're poking holes in the pellicle with that too. But I mean, a little hole, like taking a sample or something like that, it's not the end of the world.
So when you say top off with wort, you mean it's the base beer? You just have to keep brewing fresh base beer to top it off?
That's what I'm saying. Don't top it off with wort, but actual beer. I guess you could top it off with wort, but then you're adding more unfermented sugars into the beer. And, you know, they will need to be consumed. So if you're talking about slow bacterial action or something like that, that may not be the best way to go. What I usually do is make more beer than will fit in the barrels. And then it's fermented out, and then it's added to the barrels, and we save some in kegs. And then we use a keg to top them off. So we'll have a keg we'll use a barrel filler and shoot it into the kegs or into the barrels from the keg.
He goes on to say that he's heard you two say that you don't want to age the sour beer on top of the yeast cake. But if you inoculate a barrel with the critters, then fill the barrel with the Saccharomyces fermented beer, it's going to build a population while it attenuates the rest of the beer down. Let's say from the mid-teens to terminal, like 10.02.
Right.
Is that population minimal enough not to worry about? Or one step further, doing primary fermentation with Brett or Lacto or PDO, do you still need a secondary for that sort of thing?
You can get quite a Brett cake. Generally, if you do the fermentation in another vessel, then you're okay. If you want to do everything in and once you transfer to the barrel, the amount of buildup in there is generally minimal. But if you want to ferment directly in the barrel, it just depends on so many things.
Yeah, I'd say I agree with you. I think doing the primary fermentation in another vessel, then transferring to a barrel to sour, that amount of yeast is not a concern.
Right, but direct into the barrel for your initial primary.
Yeah, and then however long you sit to sour. I mean, 6 months, you're probably going to get some autolysis and some of those flavors.
It's a meaty. But, one of the things that I think helps slow that down a little bit is, the micro-oxygen that comes in. Mm-hmm. I think that helps. It depends what kind of yeast it is. If it's like Brett, it's used to those conditions, and I think it doesn't break down as much as like a regular sac yeast does. But with, Brett getting micro-oxygen, having some other foods to eat there, being able to access the starches and things like that, I think that kind of keeps it going, and you don't get as much breakdown or death that way.
Okay.
Here's the next one, another yeast question. This one's from Travis Comble. He said, guys, if I add 5 pounds, which is a 17.2%.
Into a 3-pound sack.
Will it overflow? If I add 5 pounds of cane or beet sugar a day or two after pitching yeast to a 10-gallon batch, do I pitch for the OG before sugar or including sugar? I am brewing a Belgian style and want some yeast character.
I generally go with, pitch for what you're going to ferment out, in the first couple of days. Base your pitch off of that.
OG before sugar then?
Yeah, generally.
That's what I was thinking too.
I mean, if you're going to go mad with sugar additions, then you might want to add more yeast later on as well. And, if you're going to get up into, some seriously high ABV levels, then you might start worrying. If it's a sugar addition, partway in, that's no big deal.
Right.
This guy also wants to know if it is significantly affecting his pitching rate and end product when fermentation pushes yeast into his blow-off tube. He said, there's a measurable increase in the volume in my blow-off container. Not that I measured it, but I could. But what do you think? Is it affecting his pitching rate?
His pitching rate? Well, I mean, it's taking yeast out of the solution, I think, is what he's talking about. So
Yeah, but it's coming off the very top if he's talking about blow off.
Right, which is, you know, as far as yeast go, it's great yeast for repitching. Right. It depends. And, you know, I also believe, you know, once that drops back down into the beer, that yeast can be active still. You know, it can re-enter and be active in, like, diacetyl reduction, things like that. But generally, you don't need to worry about it. You know, when it's fermenting, fermentation is with the yeast that's in suspension, not on the surface. So if you take that off, you still get fermentation. You know, all the yeast is being carried up by CO2. So don't think that's really as much of an issue. All right, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll have more of your questions right after this.
And now, Northern Brewer presents What If Homebrewers Ruled the World?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll follow me, I will lead you into the gallery area. Now, the first piece up for sale today is a Jamil Zainashev original, a bottle of 1997 vintage Evil Twin.
Oh, I say!
A bidding for this one-of-a-kind piece will start at £7,000. And if you'll continue to follow me, ladies and gentlemen, I can show you a rather abstract piece from Bay Area brewer Justin Crossley. It's a German Doppelbock entitled Justin's Giant Bock. The brewer's notes here indicate that this beer had excellent mouthfeel.
That's just a crazy dream. Or is it? With Northern Brewer, a thirsty nation can craft its own ale and lager for the greater good of mankind. Northern Brewer, the home of superior customer service and the finest selection of homebrewing goods for the future.
Hi, I'm Jamil Zainashev, and in addition to my work on the Brewing Network, I write the style profile column in every issue of Brew Your Own magazine.
Hi, I'm Sean Paxton, and when I'm not prepping for the Home Brewed Chef on the Brewing Network, you can find me writing articles on how to cook with your home brew for Brew Your Own magazine.
Greetings, Cretans. This is John Palmer, and when I'm not writing for Brew Your Own, I'm reading it.
John Palmer, Sean Paxton, Jamil Zainashev. If you love listening to them on the Brewing Network, you'll love reading their articles, tips, and recipes in the pages of Brew Your Own magazine. Join Jamil, John, and Sean 8 times a year in Brew Your Own. And when you subscribe to BYO on the Brewing Network website, half of your subscription price goes right back to the BN to support great beer and food programming. So sign up for Brew Your Own magazine through the BN website today so you can listen and read your way to better homebrew.
That's it. I've had it. I am never putting hops in my beer again.
What? Why?
It's just too ridiculous. Insane prices, stupid contracts, high shipping costs, crappy selection.
Dude, you need Nico Brew.
Nico Brew will rock your f***ing face right the f*** off your f***ing skull. $5 shipping to all 50 states, plus fantastic international rates, get you low prices on Nico Brew's great selection of hops and more. Whether you're a home brewer, a pro brewer, or a homebrew shop owner, Nico Brew can get you the hops you need in increments big and small, single orders, spot buys, or full contracts. And there's only one place to join the uber special secret Elite Bare Bones Club, where you'll get the best deals anywhere.
Holy f***ing shit!
NicoBrew.com. NikoBrew. Nico Brew, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
Have you ever dreamed of attending the World Brewing Academy? This year, thanks to Lalamond and Anstar, one lucky brewer will make that dream a reality for free. Lalamond and Danstar invite you to enter the Beer School 2015 contest. One lucky grand prize winner will receive fully paid tuition to the 2015 World Brewing Academy web-based concise course in brewing technology worth almost $4,000. From now until December 13, 2014, every Danstar yeast packet you use is your ticket to enter. Visit danstaryeast.com for the details and to print your official entry form. There's no limit on the number of times you can enter, so get brewing with Danstar and get your entries in to the Danstar 2015 Beer School Contest. Whether you want to build your home brewing skills or build a career as a professional brewer, this course will change the way you think of beer and brewing. Enter at danstaryeast.com and get the dry yeast advantage with Danstar and Lalamond premium brewing yeast, and enter to win.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters, this is Jamel Zanishev, and I love a bold, hoppy beer when it spits resin in your face and makes you cry uncle. There are a lot of great hoppy beers out there, but at Heretic, we want to make something as bold, dank, and resiny as possible. We use hops at every chance we get, including multiple dry hop additions. The result is Heretic Evil Cousin. This light golden, 8% Imperial IPA has an easy malt character that helps take the edge off the massive bittering, but it takes a back seat to the in-your-face hop character. We make sure this beer finishes dry so the hops can jump out and slam you in the taste buds. If you can't get enough hoppy goodness, Evil Cousin is your cup of tea. Cheers.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, so during that break, we learned what a chicken shit Scott is.
Oh, please. You would have been scared, too. How dare you?
You knew that was coming. Come on. I guess. Yeah. We talked about Salvation and Classic Rock. All during that break, you missed all of that from the good folks, brought to you by the good folks at AdamandEve.com. Yes.
And God said, visit Adam and Eve.
God said, buy a big dildo. For a limited time only, AdamandEve.com, and you can pick up 3 free adult DVDs. So you go there, you buy just one thing, right? You pick out the one thing you need, whatever that might be.
Lubrication, perhaps.
Use the offer code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, at checkout. And then you're going to get 3 free adult DVDs. You're going to get free shipping, and you get a free extra gift. So sensual, I can't really tell you what it is. But you know, it's not just any 3 free DVDs. You know, they're not like scraping the barrel, giving you like the pig fucker DVDs. What they're going to give you, you get a choice. You know what your choices are?
You ready? Everyone get ready.
All right.
You've slowed me down.
Got bells on.
Anal, amateur, Asian, big breast, big butt, bisexual, chunky, coeds, fetish, gay, interactive POV, lesbian, MILF, etc. You get to choose from all those good categories. You can even shop from your mobile phone. AdamandEve.com. Check it out. Use the offer code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L. And again, you buy one thing, 50% off. All the rest of that stuff's free. Free shipping, free extra gift, 3 free DVDs. So check it out today. They've been a longtime sponsor as well. And you know, by all accounts, they're actually some good people and do some good customer service. So check them out. All right. Let's see. We've got time for maybe one more question or any questions from the chat.
Yeah, let's do another one. You're going to love this, John, because this guy said, "Hi, Scott and Jamil." there seems to be 2 yeast growth equations in use these days. They both give wildly different estimates for final cell count. For example, try 50 B cells in a 2-liter starter using both Brockheiser and White. You get answers of 338 B and 193 B cells, respectively.
That's billion, by the way.
Billion, okay. Okay, B. I see a lot of people transitioning to use the Brockheiser yeast growth estimates. The reason being that there were some pretty convincing science posted to back it up, while claiming that the Chris White and Mr. Malty numbers came from scaling the growth numbers of a starter shaken intermittently. He was wondering if Jamil has seen any of these calculators and claims, and what does he think of them? He's confused as to why they could be so different.
Yeah, you know, so a couple of things. One is, you know, I spent 6 months growing up starters, different strains, different methods, and counting the results, graphing them all out, and then also the good folks at Y-East, Greg Doss, he had done the same thing, and lo and behold, we both came up with almost identical curves, and so that's what the Mr. Malty calculator uses, is that because of the lab work and independently verified by another source. The thing about yeast and yeast growth, and a lot of times I see these other things where there's science behind it, and what they use is numbers. And they say, well, you know, if the mass of yeast and the amount of sugar, and if they use all this, then, you know, they're going to grow like this, they're going to grow like that. The reality is, yeast don't use numbers to grow. They are a natural, you know, fungus that is reproducing at a certain rate and under certain conditions, and all these things have an effect on them. And so the actual number that you get out at the other end may or may not be what the predicted theoretical thing is. That's why you really need to grow it, measure it, and then see what your result is. And that's why those numbers may vary from, you know, what you might see somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen several things where people, you know...
And different strains could grow at different rates.
Right, different rates. Different cells have different mass. Mm-hmm. So not all cells, you know, weigh the same or have the same amount of material that make up a cell. And so if you're saying, oh, you know, I count, 10 billion of this lager yeast, and I count, 10 billion of this ale yeast, well, that ale yeast may be, you know, 50 times more mass to it, you know, or, you know, vice versa. Or you may have, that's why people go, well, can't I just tell how much yeast is in there by looking at, you know, the volume? Not really, because, you know, the cell size can be completely different. You know, one can be, you know, tenfold bigger than the other. So that's one of the issues. What you want to do, though, is, you know, just make sure you have enough. And it doesn't really matter. I keep telling people this. People are like, well, you know, what about this calculator, that calculator? They don't agree. It's like, well, personally, I think use the Mr. Malty one because it's free and it really does help to ensure, you know, a consistency in your beer. So what you're looking for is making sure you always have enough yeast. It's not so easy to over pitch a beer, right?
That's right. Yeah,
it is much easier, very easy to underpitch. So you stick with the numbers in Mr. Malty, and that is a safe one. People go, oh, you know, the viability. Even the yeast guys were a little miffed at me to put the viability numbers I did. Now, those viability numbers in the Mr. Malty calculator are actually based off of, you know, going through and checking viability on these things. And you just don't know how a package of yeast has been treated until you got it. You know, how long did it sit in the UPS truck? How long did it sit on the floor at the homebrew shop before it got put in the fridge? I mean, did somebody, you know, think they wanted to buy it, walk around the store for a couple hours with it, and then at the end decide they didn't want it and put it back in the fridge? I mean, who knows? So you can't be 100% certain. So you got to take a, you know, kind of a worst case scenario on that and say, well, okay, you should have this viability still. Even under, you know, adverse conditions, this is generally what you're going to have. And that way, you're sure that when you invest $40 in some ingredients, that you're going to get decent beer out of it. Versus, you know, people that want to know exactly how many cells they have, they should be counting them. They shouldn't count, you know, rely on a calculator that is just going to be an estimate, no matter what. So all these things, it's like freaking IBU calculators. People are like, oh, no,
exactly.
No, this is correct. That one's correct. They're all wrong. Every single one of them's wrong. I'll tell you right now. That's okay. It's just a tool for you to have some consistency. When you make that beer now, when you make it later on, you go, well, I want it more hoppy, or I want, to make sure I'm attenuating well. I don't think I pitched enough yeast. Then you can adjust based off of that. But, you know, that's its sole purpose. And what you need to do is you need to, you know, taste the beer afterwards and decide, hey, you know, maybe this problem I'm having is because I'm not pitching enough yeast. I need to make sure that, you know, my number is this or whatever it would be. If you want to know exactly how many cells you're pitching, then you need to get yourself a microscope, a hemocytometer, and you need to count them. If you want to know what IBUs you're actually getting, then you need to get, you know, a spectrophotometer. You need to go ahead and, you know, measure the IBUs. You know, same thing on color, all this stuff. All the software out there is crap as far as calculating any of this. You know, Beersmith, ProMash, all of them, they're crap for the equations. They're great tools, but don't count on them to tell you what your beer is. You'll find that out by tasting it, by, you know, by measuring it, the final result. People will go, well, you know, my ABV is this. Well, how do you know? Well, that's what the software told me it would be. And they haven't even, like, measured their final gravity or their starting gravity. It's like, you know, measure your starting gravity, measure your final gravity. Then you know, then you have an idea what your ABV is. You really don't, you know, 100%, but you have a pretty good idea.
Yeah, your message is that all software are models.
Yes.
They're tools.
Yes.
What about over-pitching? That's I don't even know if I've ever really heard of a beer that has been done upon. How would one even over-pitch? Make too big a yeast starter?
Yeah, you can take one of the things people like to do is not do anything with their yeast. They'll rack a beer off and then rack a beer onto that giant mess in the bottom of the fermenter. And there you can have an over-pitching situation.
And what is it? What happens?
You know, the beer's just lacking. I purposefully did it. I went and got a massive pitch of yeast from a brew pub and massively overpitched a beer to see what the results would be. And, you know, it lacked character. It attenuated fairly well. It left some acetaldehyde, but you get some character from growth that is important to the production of beer and the flavor and the character of beer.
And if you overpitch, it doesn't need to grow.
Yeah, you don't.
Often
get
you don't get the ester little character. You may get some acetaldehyde character left over. It depends.
So
there's never a situation that would call for the characteristics or lack thereof that come from overpitching. There would never be a reason to do it.
I suppose you could come up with something to do that and, you know, make your own, you know, you could always make your own beer style. But there is no classic beer style that, you know, encompasses that.
And Jamil, would you agree that overpitching is itself a kind of a bell curve? I mean, you overpitch a little bit, it's not a big deal. It's when you overpitch a lot that you start having problems.
It's a massive amount.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like an immediate effect. Oh, my God, I've gone over, you know, pitched double the amount. It's like, I pitched triple the amount. It's not, you know, then, you know, or four times the amount. It's not twice as bad as that. It's, you know, it's a pretty mellow ramp to problematic.
Right.
So, again, you know, use whichever one you're most comfortable with. I mean, I think one of the great things about Beersmith is people find it easy to use. They, you know, they like all the options in it, and, you know, go ahead and use those calculations. If it's handy for you and it works for you, continue using it. But the important thing is to taste the results and to analyze the results, and then use those tools to help you model, you know, what you should be doing differently. You know, that's really the only way to do it. All of that software out there. And this comes from somebody who made their living at software. It's all crap, you know. As far as modeling reality, it does a very poor job of it. So, there you go. Ah, yes. Making friends in the beer industry, show by show.
Yeah, support Beersmith. Support those who support us, please.
Right.
As much as it sucks, use it.
Yeah. I just said it was crap. I didn't say it sucked.
That's true.
I just said all the formulas out there, I mean, they're all just...
They're all models.
Yeah, they're all models. And any
benchmarks,
model.
You need to set it. Look at the benchmark, look at what you get, and work from there.
Well, and like you wonder why the weather forecasters are always wrong. Yeah, they're using the same sort of modeling thing, and, you know, that's why they're wrong.
Yeah,
you know?
But, you know, people do trust the weatherman over looking out the window. They're like, well, it said it was going to rain. Yeah, but it's not raining.
You know, they pay so much money for it, it must be right. No. So there you go. All right. If you enjoyed that, make sure to check out our fine sponsor, BlickmanEngineering.com. Check out the Brewery Network store. Lots of goodies in there. Shirts, hats, hoodies, books, everything. And all that stuff goes to the bottom line of the Brewing Network. So make sure to stop in there, check that out, and support the Brewing Network. Till later, everybody. Brew strong.
Brew strong.